Well, hi there. It's time for the Hector Cube Peabody Show. Once again, as usual, I guess Hector isn't here.
I'm Dan McGuire.
And I'm Chuck Shaden, hoping you'll join us for the next 30 minutes or so.
As we sit in for Hector Q. Peabody's.
Right. But, how shall we open the show, Dan?
Well, let's open it the way we did last week.
Well, I don't remember because I wasn't here last week.
I wasn't here either.
Well, why don't we just use our imagination and do something creative for a change? Let's start off with a record.
A record?
Yeah.
All right, let's do this.
That'll be different.
Sure.
Okay, let's play a record. Got one on the turntable, Joe? Anyone, anything you happen to have over there. Okay, let's give it a spin.
Chuck, since Hector still isn't here, we may as well go right into the interview portion of our program.
Yeah, you interview the guest, and I'll get some
coffee
or something.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the portion of our program where we have informal interviews with people of absolutely no importance whatsoever. Now it is our pleasure to interview Dr. Hans Periskarter, noted authority on almost anything, who will talk with us today on the Dictionary by Webster. Dr. Periskarter?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. McVire, and everybody here on the Hector Q. Peabody Shows. And, by the way, where are you?
Well, right here, in front of you.
Oh, yeah, I see you now. My eyes are a little tired from all the reading I've been doing, you know.
Is that right? Well, Doctor, yeah. I understand you put quite a bit of reading into your study of the dictionary. Will you tell us exactly how long it did take you to finish reading it?
Well, I think I started it somewhere around 1949, but I'm not sure. You see, I would have been through reading it sooner, however, but only I had to stop once or twice to eat and sleep, you know.
Oh, I see. Well, now that you've finished reading the dictionary, what conclusions have you arrived at concerning it?
Well, I find out that it's a very long book, you know.
Is that all?
Oh, no, I also learned that it's very heavy book.
Oh, naturally, but didn't you find out anything interesting that you could tell us about in it?
Well, I did find one thing that interests me very, very much. You see, I found that you can read it from the front to the backs, or from the backs to the fronts, and it doesn't take any excitement out of plots, you know?
Oh, then you did find the plot exciting.
Well, not exactly. See, it was pretty good in places, but the author never went very far with it. See, he'd tell you a little about one thing, and just when you was getting interested, he'd suddenly be talking about something else.
Would you say, Doctor, that the characters were well done?
Oh, yeah. I would say they were quite rare. They were very well defined.
Well, Doctor, would you say that the book is easily readable?
Well, my copy was in large print and very easy to read, you know.
No, Doctor. I mean, is it easy to understand?
Oh, that. Well, according to the advertisement on the cover, a 7-year-old child should be able to understand it, but of course I had a little troubles myself.
Why was that?
Well, I'm 39, you know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, Doctor, did you find, as did some people who have read and reviewed the book, that certain passages were rather morbid?
Yeah.
Well, Doctor, in your candid opinion, do you think this book will ever make the bestseller list?
Well, I'm afraid not, you see, because the book is so big and it looks so much like schoolbooks that nobody's ever going to want to buy it, you know?
I see. But suppose another publisher were to put the book out in condensed form.
Well, in that case, I think it might have a chance, but you'd have to put the picture of a beautiful Fräulein on the cover with, you know, with a negligee and stuff like that.
Oh, yes, I understand.
Stuff like that.
Now, Doctor, you say that you don't think much of the book's chances of becoming a bestseller. How do you feel about the chance of its becoming a classic? By that, I mean one which will be read down through the ages.
No, I don't think so with that either, because at the rate the Americans are changing the language around to suit themselves all the time, 20 years from now, there won't be nobody but knows what Mr. Webster's talking about.
Doctor, I understand the book has a very important message in it.
Oh, yeah. You see, I got mine copied from the book of the book from the library, the public library, and in between pages 68... On 69th, there was a little note what somebody had put in there, and it said, "Meet me tonight at the same place at 8 o'clock.
Well, do you think the author put his message over?
No, I'm afraid not, because he didn't say where the place was, and I'd never been there before, so I looked all night, but I couldn't find him, you know.
Well,
the
Doctor,
stupid thing that they did there.
I see our time is almost up, but before you go, I have one more question I'd like to ask you. Do you think this book would be of special interest to anyone in particular?
Oh, yeah, definitely so. This book would be excellent for anyone who is studying medicines.
How is that?
Well, in the back of the book, they could practice ripping out the appendixes.
Yes. Well, Doctor, thank you for your completely uninteresting talk, and I'm sorry we couldn't talk to you a little longer.
Ah, that's all right, because I wanted to get home early tonight anyway.
How come?
Well, I understand that they're going to have the movie version of the dictionary on the television tonight, and I'm just dying to see it. So, goodbye, and thank you very much, Mr. Peabody.
McGuire is the name.
Oh, isn't you Peabody?
No.
I thought you was Peabody.
Well, goodbye, Dr. Dr. Summerholm, and thank you very much.
These are the blues. Nothing but blues. Oh, they say some people long ago were searching for a different tune, one that they could croon as only they can. They only had the rhythm, so they started swaying to and fro. They didn't know just what to use. This is how the blues really began. They trees singing weird melodies, and they made that the start of the blues. And from a jail came the wave of a down-hearted frail, and they played that as a part of the blues. From a whippoorwill way up on a hill, they took a new note, pushed it through a horn until it was worn into a blue note. And then they nursed it, they rehearsed it, and then sent out that news that the Southland gave birth to the blues. They nursed it, then they rehearsed it, and they sent out that news that the Southland, they gave birth to the blues.
Buck Corbett in the 26th century. Yes, space kiddies, it's time once again to blast off on another thrilling episode in the thrilling adventures of Buck Thrilling, Buck Corbett, Space Academy Senior, 4F. Remember yesterday, space kiddies, we left Buck Corbett and Rory Rockets as young undergraduate companion at the Space Academy on the campus landing field. There they are checking over Buck's homemade rocket ship, preparing for a trip to the moon to see if there is any kind of life there as an extra credit project for their science class. Let's listen.
Hi, Rory. How are you?
I'm fine, Buck, but I've got some bad news for you.
Bad news? What is it?
Well, I won't be able to go with you as navigator on your trip to the moon.
What? Not go with me? But why not?
Because I flucked out on my course in future history at the academy. I've got to make it up in summer school.
Gosh, that's too bad.
But you can get someone else for navigator, can't you, Buck?
Yeah, but not anyone that I could trust or depend on as I could with you, Rory lad.
Gee, I'm sorry, Buck. I guess I've really let you down.
Oh, forget it, kid. It was probably the teacher's fault anyway.
But, Buck, you're not going to try to make it to the moon by yourself, are you?
Why not? I made a trip to Saturn by myself.
I know, but that was in your father's rocket ship. This one you built yourself may not hold together for the trip. Anyway, Buck, you don't know what to expect when you get there. No one has ever bothered to explore the moon before.
I know, but don't forget the old saying, Rory. Semper Junius Magnum Num Maximus.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but it sure sounds good, doesn't it?
Gee, Buck, quit the kidding. I'm scared.
Cheer up, Rory. There's nothing to worry about. Come on, let's look the rocket ship over and see if she's in shape for the trip.
Good idea. The last time we took her out for a spin, the gravitator was a little bit off-center.
I know, and the kinetic galaxy meter hasn't been putting up such a good show lately either.
Well, maybe you've got it tuned to the wrong channel. You know, at first I thought the hydroelectric metronome might have been a little out of line, but when I checked out, I found that there wasn't anything wrong with it. You see, I was mucking around with it.
So Buck and Rory go inside the rocket to give it one last going over before Buck leaves for the moon, alone. The semester is almost over at the academy, and all is quiet in the hot summer as the people of Earth go about their workaday universe. And Rory Rockets, in his class in future history, wonders what Buck is finding on the far-off planet, or if he has even made it alive. He doesn't have long to wait, however, for 3 weeks later he hears the sound of Buck's hot rod rocket ship landing in his backyard.
See you, pal. How was it? Did you have any trouble with the ship? I've been looking for you every day. Hey, what's the matter? You look beat. Did something go wrong?
No, nothing went wrong.
Then why the long face? Didn't you make it to the moon?
Oh, Oh, I made it all right. It only took me 700 light years.
Well, what is it then? What's bothering you, Buck?
Oh, the whole trip was a waste of time. You're lucky you didn't come along, Rory.
What do you mean? I don't get it.
Oh, you should have seen it. I was never so disappointed in all my life, and after I worked for months getting that rocket ship ready.
Well, what was it that was so disappointing? For Pete's sake, tell me, will you?
Okay, you might as well know. I hate to disillusion you, Rory, but the moon is...
The moon is what? What did you find out about it?
Well, I found out that it's...
It's only a paper moon, sailing over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Yes, it's only a canvas sky, hanging over a muslin tree. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Without your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love, it's a melody played in a penny arcade. It's a Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love, it's a melody played in a penny arcade. It's a Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Postman, is your index finger sore, bruised, and ragged from ringing doorbells twice all day long? Why not try our new revolutionary Postman's Index Finger Protector?
Made of genuine synthetic rubber and somewhat resembling a thimble, this finger protector fits your index finger snugly, does not slip or slide. What's more, it not only prevents corns and calluses caused by excessive contact with rough doorbells, but caresses your finger and makes both fingernail and fingertip feel better all day.
Now, to get this wonderful Postman's Index Finger Protector, just put your left thumb along with $2.75 in an envelope and mail to Finger. That's F-I-N-G-E-R. Finger, care of the station to which you are now listening. But don't wait. This offer is good for a limited time only.
Sorry, no COD orders accepted.
Thank you. that's it for the Hector Q. Peabody show for today. And Hector hasn't shown up at all.
Hey, Chuck.
Yeah, what is it, Dan?
I just found out from his secretary where he's been.
Oh, yeah, where is he?
He was commissioned to train African gorillas for undersea work in the Atlantic as frogmen.
Hector?
He won't be back until next week.
Not again.
Yeah.
Well, all right, we've been carrying through thus far. We'll keep it up until next week, then. This is Chuck Shaden.
And Dan McGuire.
Thank you. Thanking you for tuning in. Hoping you'll be with us next week at the same time when we again present the Hector Q. Peabody Show with, we hope,
Hector Q. Peabody. Give the credits.
Joe Abrascada was running the turntables. Coffee was by Percolator. Cake by the Baker's
Union. And sound by Marconi.
This has been a CLS production.
Hector, you forgot your water wings. Thank you.